I think I wanted to start this conversation with a little bit of context, Qualia, and so, to provide that to the callers. As much as we, I don't, as much as I read about Davenhor online, I'm still trying to grasp all of its magnificence. So I'm sure you get this question a lot. Like, what is it? So how do you usually describe it to someone that has never heard of it before?
Davenhor is a spiritual eco-community in northern Italy with 1,000 citizens and members worldwide. And it's a living dream. It's a laboratory, an experimentation field for the future of humanity. And it's won awards, national awards for sustainability. And what really drew me to Davenhor is that it brings alive so many different aspects of my passions, which are spirituality, connection to nature, organic food and agriculture, communities and cooperative living, activism, solidarity, deep spiritual practice, art and temples. And so Davenhor has created underground temples called the Temples of Humankind, which are magnificent underground sacred spaces with beautiful visionary art intended to reawaken awareness of the divine spark within each of us. And so this is the spiritual message and core that animates all of Davenhor, that each one of us has a divinity within to reawaken and express in our full potential. And so our spiritual philosophy is one of action. So it's not enough to just be aware of this divine spark. Each one of us, in order to fully live it, we express it in matter, doing practical things, creating things together, doing collaborative artwork, or building community houses, or working in our businesses and initiatives. So it's a very practical school of spirituality in action. And Davenhor is concentrated mostly in that area of northern Italy, close to Turin or Milan, if you're familiar with Italy. And so there are about over 20 community houses in spread out all throughout that valley, and that's the core of Davenhor. There are two main campuses there. And Davenhor is also global and worldwide. There are communities and centers in other parts of Europe and also in Japan. And we have many networks of friends and connections and spiritual brothers and sisters all over the world.
Wow. That sounds really, so many questions just emerged from your description. And I want to dig deeper into the descriptions that you just shared, but before we go into it, also I think it would be really wonderful to learn a little bit more about you. I know you're the first American-born citizen of Davenhor, and can you please share like what led you there? When we connected over Skype last week, you mentioned a series of synchronistic events that occurred, I think, while you were traveling in Europe. So can you share those events and a little bit about your own, personal background and what led you to this place in northern Italy?
Yes. Well, I was living in San Francisco, living at the San Francisco Zen Center and working at Rainbow Grocery, and had a work study period in a community called Esalen in Big Sur. And I went back to Esalen to visit a friend there, and I met an artist in the art studios there named Piovra Cafe. And she's a Venturian artist and teaching stained glass there, because in the temples there are beautiful stained glass domes and windows, and so Davenhor is very well known for this technique. And she needed a ride to San Francisco, and she came with me that day because I just happened to be driving up, and she told me some very small things about Davenhor, much less than I just told you, because she spoke this very basic English. So she said it's a spiritual eco-community in northern Italy, and we live in connection with nature, and we've made these beautiful underground temples using breathing techniques and meditation to make art and have these spiritual visions for the temples. And so I was really intrigued, and just following my intuition, which told me to leave San Francisco. And so I gradually went through a phase of traveling and Buddhism. And was traveling. I thought I was going to go to Asia. I went briefly back to Texas to visit my family. And while I was at a festival there, one night, as I was walking across a field, I saw fire lanterns in the sky, a series of lanterns. And it made an arrow shape. And I thought, that's a sign. That's the direction I need to go in my travels. And I took out my compass, and it was pointing east, which really surprised me because I wanted to go to Southeast Asia, and that's west of Texas. So I got out a world map later on and used a pendulum to do dowsing. And it was indicating, the pendulum was indicating for me to go to Italy. And I started receiving all of these signs to go to Italy, dreams and conversations. And so I really trusted that and got a one-way ticket to Rome. And then I thought of Dom and her and this woman I had met, and planned my first visit there. And so I was dancing through Italy. I'm also a fire dancer, so I was doing performances and visiting organic farms, and finally made it to Dom and her. And it was like coming for the first time in my life. It was just a very intuitive, energetic, spiritual sense of being at home and being so complete as a community, as a space, as a creation, and immediately felt very resonant. And so after about a year of continued travels and going to Dom and her for courses and for work exchange to experience the community life, I decided to live there and become a citizen there. And so I've been a full-time, what's called an A citizen, for 5 years now. And just recently I've come back to the San Francisco Bay Area and am currently working to bridge Dom and her and some of the San Francisco area people and communities, helping to organize events and workshops and retreats and temple spaces that are connected to Dom and her.
Okay. Wow, I'm still struck by the image you shared earlier in your response about the arrow in the sky and looking at your compass and pointing east. That, you know, I feel like a lot of people might see something like that and might not even notice that it takes the shape of an arrow. And there's so many signs that are given to us in life that we just miss. So I think that really says a lot about how present you are and in touch you are with the world around you.
And it also speaks to Dom and her, one of the spiritual principles and teachings of Dom and her, which is synchronicity, that all things are connected and all things have a certain meaning, even if it might be beyond our human understanding. And so it's, synchronicity is something that we can definitely notice, either more than also work with and change to attract synchronic events in our lives.
Going along with that, synchronicity and also, you know, all things are connected. You know, I learned from the description that the UN Global Forum on Human Settlements, which I didn't even know existed until I learned about Dom and her, they awarded Dom and her the Sustainable Community Award. And so that, I'm interested to know what is the system and structure like in Dom and her? How is it designed in order to support, you know, respect and coexistence with our environment? Because everything, you know, is interconnected. And so, you know, how is the community designed to support that?
Okay, departing from the spiritual practice, which was the first manifestation of Dom and her, there is this understanding that we are part of a spiritual ecosystem, just as we are part of a physical ecosystem. in connection with many different levels of beings. And so with this sense of interconnection, there's a natural respect for nature, for plants, for animals, for the resources we have on Earth, because if I'm damaging the Earth, I'm damaging myself because I'm part of the Earth's ecosystem, as well as spiritually. So, for instance, we have a project called the Tree Orientation Project, which is healing the connection between the human realm and the tree and plant realm, which has historically been united, but because of the destruction that has been enacted on Earth by humans, it has been separated. So it's a way of kind of sewing these different realms back together, the human and the tree realm. So that's one example of reconnection with nature through spiritual awareness. The communities in Damanhur are all moving towards self-sufficiency as much as possible in terms of food and energy, and also everything that we do and create. So we're not there at 100%, although that's one of the intentions, is to get as close as possible. And there really is a special value to that, like just being able to be in Damanhur and wear clothes that some of my community members have made and eat food that was grown in our gardens with spiritual awareness as it was being grown and harvested and cooked and presented, and to be able to buy furniture that another one of my community members have made and go to a concert of music of musicians made in our community and go to the temples that we created ourselves, and to share my poetry with others, and not only have physical sustainability and self-sufficiency, but also cultural. So to really create an exchange within our community system, and to facilitate that, we have a complementary currency called the credito.
Mm-hmm.
So the currency, money that is used within the community, and also some of the nearby businesses, to encourage local exchange and to encourage the awareness of the true value of service and the true value of things that we create and share.
Wow. But let me go back to the spiritual awareness, you know, which is, I think, comes out of living in a community like Damanhur. My question is more about, it seems that art is integral to the ecosystem there. And you mentioned the Temple of Human Kindness earlier. And so can you share a little bit more about, in your personal experiences, as well as, you know, the community life in Damanhur, the different forms of art and the role of art in heightening our spiritual awareness and tapping into it and building community. And then as you answer that, also use that maybe as a segue to talk about the Temple of Human Kindness and the inspiration behind those temples, because that's a really fascinating story as well.
Mm-hmm. For me personally, I love art and artistic expression of all kinds, whether it's painting and drawing or singing or dancing, writing, making music. And I've found channels of expression in all of these different areas in Damanhur. And art at Damanhur, it's always collective art. It's always art in community. So there's not the sense of there being the genius artist who is exalted and famous. There is the sense of art being a vehicle for spiritual awakening and also for community connectedness. And so the temples of humankind are created by the whole community. There's no one main artist, just as all of the other artworks in the community are collectively made. And so sometimes it's even hard to know who painted what part of the temples or who exactly made a particular sculpture that's on the land. And so that's a sense of really achieving together and awakening together as a popolo. I use that word in the poem that I wrote, and that means peoples. And I left it in Italian because it doesn't really translate completely into English. There's a sense of being deeply connected to an identity, to a peoples, to a spiritual alliance within a group that many of the indigenous groups on Earth have and have had and are sometimes in danger of losing. So it's reconnecting to that sense of popolo. And so it's really special to see art and see creativity at Damanhur. And there's really a sense of meaning and pride. Like there's a thing about art at Damanhur, that art is giving meaning to life in everything that we do. And so with that attitude, even sweeping the floor and taking out the compost can be art. With the temples of humankind, to explain a little bit about the location of the temples and of Damanhur, there are energy lines that run around the globe and connect the Earth to the universe called synchronic lines. And they're not magnetic lines, they're not ley lines. It's a different system of energy, of information, of dreams that flow. And many of the ancient sacred spaces have been built along the lines or at a point where two of the lines cross. And so Falco and the original founders of Damanhur, when they decided to build a community in order to accelerate spiritual by using each other as mirrors, they went on a search around the globe for these things, researching different power places. And they found that there are two points on Earth where four of these synchronic lines cross. One is in Tibet, and one is in Italy, where Damanhur is currently located. So after this global search for the right place, they went back to about 40 miles from where they started. So it goes to show that sometimes the things that we're seeking for most in life are right there in front of our eyes. And so the synchronic lines are sometimes very high in the air, deep in the earth. They're actually fairly rare to find on the surface. And so that's one of the reasons that the temples were built underground, is to access those very powerful energy lines for spiritual work. And so the temples serve as a reminder to all of us of the divine nature of humankind. And it's actually a series of eight different spaces, corridors that connect them. And so each one has a particular element or a particular characteristic that's associated with it. And going to visit them and being in the temples is like an alchemical ourselves and a journey to reawakening different parts and potentialities of ourselves.
And anyone can visit these temples, it seems like. Anyone can come to Damanhur and take a tour, right?
Yes, there are many different kinds of visits. It's open all year to visitors. And so from a half day to a week-long visit, including a temple visit, an experience, and different meditations that can be done in the different halls after an initial visit. And I'd also like to share that right now there is a fairly new program, just a couple of years now, called New Life. And this is a program that allows anyone who wants to have an experience of living in Damanhur to go and do so for 3 months, be immersed in community life. And everything that is happening at Damanhur, just as all of the citizens do, so living in the community houses, participating in the community meetings and rituals, and having special classes and experiences to get to know Damanhur. And so if anyone is interested in that, you can contact me or go on the Damanhur website.
And yeah, I saw that there's also a virtual tour online that kind of took me through the temples, and it's really magnificent. I don't know how many years it took to build all of those temples. but
the
I read somewhere.
Started being built in August of 1978, which is actually the month before I was born. So in some ways, I feel like, as a soul, I followed this call of the temples being here on Earth. And they were actually built in secret for about 16 years, because in Italy at the time there were no building regulations for underground constructions of that kind. And sometimes even members of the community didn't know about them because they were kept sacred and reserved in this way. And then when they became known to the public, there was danger of them being destroyed. And so there was a big campaign to save the temples. And they were, recognized as having artistic and social value, and are now safe and protected and open to the public.
Wow. Secret temples. I hope to be able to visit them one day.
It really is like a science fiction adventure going to visit.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I want to shift a little bit to going back to you and your own journey. And so I sort of have a couple of interconnected questions going along with this theme of interconnectedness. Well, I want to know, you know, how living there has changed you and maybe deepened your own, the values that I think you already felt that were yours, you know, and that Dhammadhar was like a magnet maybe that was pulling you, and these values that you already inherently lived with and believed in. But how did living there, you know, intensify, strengthen those values, principles? And related to that, you know, what different roles have you played in the community? Because I know, you know, you give tours of the temples. You're a spiritual dancer as well. So if you could share a little bit about that, the different roles that you play, and how being there has changed you and helped you along your own spiritual journey.
Wow, great questions. So I think one of the core values that underlies all of the different activities and choices in my life is compassion and healing. And for me, Dhammadhar has really changed my experience of that by understanding the scope of the effect that I can have with my intentions in a spiritual community like Dhammadhar. Or any community, but particularly with the spiritual intention and practices and technology. And here I feel like my intention of expressing compassion to the world and the people and the ecosystem is magnified. And so that happens in many different ways, just by being connected to 100 or even 1,000 people. If I have a specific intention, like, for example, if I have a friend who's ill and I want to send healing energy to my friend, if I share with all of my community members, I have a friend in this condition that she needs help, that is amplified by 1,000 times by everyone being conscious of that and sending energy, and also with our relationship with spirituality, with divinity. There are ways to really magnify any individual intention. And the same goes for very practical dreams. Like, I felt like I was really making progress as a healer and an artist individually, although what I found to be really valuable at Dhammadhar, setting my intentions and doing my work in the world in this community, was that being in a group, in a team, in a community that has these shared intentions, that only really magnifies things as well. So in terms of my different roles, you mentioned the sacred dance. So there are many different spiritual pathways at Dhammadhar that we can choose from as our expression of our devotion. And so mine is the way of the oracle, which works with ritual in connection to divine forces. And within this pathway, there is a pathway of sacred dance. And so we do this particular kind of sacred dance in the rituals, including full moon ritual, the solstice, and equinoxes. And it's an expression of what's called sacred language, which is an ancient archetypal language that predates all human languages. It's within each one of us archetypically, and expressed in many different ways. It can be expressed in writing, like Chinese or Japanese ideograms, kind of similar to those kinds of characters. It can be expressed in song and chant, and it can also be expressed in dance. So every movement is a particular word, and dancing a series of these movements is like dancing a living prayer. And so this is my spiritual pathway. I also have done many different roles at Damenhur, from translation, English-Italian translation, to working with the social media and the websites and international communications, helping to organize events and conferences. We had a world summit on the theme of childbirth, and a conference for the Global Eco-Village Network that Damenhur is very active in, particularly the European network. Yes, I also founded an ecstatic dance community in Damenhur, and find dance to be incredibly healing in a way, you know, going back to the values I was talking about, to connect to each other in compassion beyond linguistic differences and age and cultural differences and socioeconomic differences. Like, our common as humans, one of them is that we all have a body and we can all experience a sense of interconnectedness and divinity within the body.
You know, listening to you, it's just making me think of my own experiences being part of intentional communities. I guess most recently I had it was quite a gift to be a part of a volunteer with the Gandhi Ashram in India, and with an NGO there. And also, you know, service space, in a sense, is an intentional community. And it makes me ask you, what are your challenges and edges? What challenges and edges come up when you are not in Damenhur, when, you know, you're an ambassador of Damenhur in the quote-unquote real world? Is it difficult for you to relate to the way the current modern world is, you know, revolving around monetary currency and this time as money and materialism? I mean, how do you relate and how do you stay present and with your compassion and joy and, you know?
Well, one of the really beautiful things of traveling so much in the world and sharing Damenhur is that I feel that there really is so much happening in the world in different ways that reflect the value, the spirit of Damenhur, whether it's other intentional communities or eco-villages in the world or other urban non-residential communities around healing or spirituality or ecological awareness or cooperatives. And I'm currently at a festival called Symbiosis, sharing some Damenhur teachings here. And so there's also the temporary community experience of festivals, where I really have a resonance and a reminder of those core intentions of what we're creating at Damenhur out in the world. And so in some ways it's really enriching to engage with people in these settings or just everyday conversations. And I talk about Damenhur, I really see people and feel them enlivened, just to know that this is happening in the world, and to know that something can really happen in a practical and grounded way based on the ideals that I think we all share as human beings and on some level or another.
Well, I know that you're also recently just started a new collaboration with Kindred Spirits out here in the Bay Area. And I'm not sure if the community out here was already Dom and Hearn or there were just similar values, but and it's called the Center for Awakening Presence. And so can you share more about that? The center,
Center for Awakening Presence is a collaboration between Dom and Hearn and the Friends of Dom and Hearn in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so these friends have already been connected to Dom and Hearn and supporting Dom and Hearn for many years. And so this is the first time we're really making it an official collaboration. So it's not exactly a physical center, although there are some different physical sites that we use for our activities. And the one is at Open Secret, which is a bookstore cultural center in San Rafael. And another one is a private home in Scotts Valley. And so in this private home, there's a temple space called a Selfika cabin. Selfika is one of the spiritual technologies of Dom and Hearn that can be expressed in many different physical forms, including paintings. And so having this itself a cabin based on the Selfika paintings from Dom and Hearn creates a very powerful energy that's also connected to Dom and Hearn energetically and spiritually. And so in end of September, Esperi de Ananas, who is one of the main Selfika researchers at Dom and Hearn, she's recently written and almost published a book about Selfika. She'll be coming to the Bay Area to activate a second temple space in the Marin area. And so the intention for this collaboration and the events in October is to ride the wave of this energetic opening, the new temple space being activated, to share with the public the teachings on Selfika. There's a two-day workshop on Selfika in Marin, and Past Lives course, which is one of the spiritual kinds of research that are done at Dom and Hearn through the way of the oracle. And there will also be a full moon retreat, and both of those will be in the Scotts Valley area. That's October 17th through 20th. And I just wanted to respond to something I heard in the sharing circle about community and wanting to be inspired or to create community right now. And so I encourage anyone who feels called to know more about Dom and Hearn and to build community to participate in one of these events, particularly the full moon meditation or the Selfika, to understand the spiritual technology that has really helped Dom and Hearn to activate all of the intentions of community and to receive this other layer of help, spiritual assistance in manifesting our community dreams. And then with the full moon retreat, there'll be time and space to explore all aspects of Dom and Hearn, from the spiritual and mystical to the social and ecological and connection with trees and so on.
Hi, this is Michelle Ehlers calling from San Jose. I'm very interested in having you speak to what you see the role is, or what the idea in the Dom and Hearn context is of these kinds of communities bringing humanity together. As I said earlier in my earlier sharing, that's a great interest of mine, and particularly the bringing awareness to the entity humanity and our role in that and our interconnectedness in that particular entity. Is there any conversation in the Dom and Hearn community, or what do you see, or the context of Dom and Hearn sees in the community sees in the awakening of humanity as an entity and the bringing together of every human being?
Yes, it's actually going back to the temples, one of the the visions and intentions and motivations of the temples, which are called the temples of humankind, precisely because there is this collective movement towards awakening as one humankind, so not as a particular religion or any particular identity of culture, nationality, or gender, really tapping into our interconnectedness as a species in a spiritual ecosystem, and that we are in a point in time of extremely powerful potential for reawakening each of our spiritual awareness and gifts and abilities, and also collectively as a species. And there is this sense of connecting beyond cultural differences also with the vision for the new temples. So there's a future temple that is envisioned in Zen called the Temple of Peoples. And this is to create a sacred space where particularly the indigenous and native peoples of the world, leaders and representatives of these people, can come and meet for peace, have encounters of peace and of sharing their particular cultures, art, and spiritual heritage, and having a repository to really keep that knowledge and culture alive. And maybe see it as a big mosaic with so many different pieces of humanity creating one whole.
Where is that temple being planned?
Excuse me?
You said something about there's a temple being planned. Where is that?
That's also going to be a Dhammapur. It's intended to be an extension of the existing temples at Dhammapur.
And are you connected with the 13 grandmothers at all? Is that part of the connectivity in that particular?
Yes, we are. We have a connection with the 13 grandmothers. Three of the grandmothers recently came to Dhammapur maybe a few years ago to do teachings and school there.
Okay, great. I was in meetings with them earlier this year, so great. It's great.
Oh, wonderful.
Uh-huh. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for the work, and thank you for what you're doing. I really
you're
appreciate
welcome.
It on behalf of humanity.
Hi, Qualia. Thank you so much for being with us on this call. I was just curious to know about how sometimes, at least I find this challenging, when you're part of a beautiful community where there's so much happening, sometimes I feel like I get lost in all the goodness and beauty around me. And, you know, I don't know how to articulate it. I hope I'm making sense, to where sometimes I have to consciously work on cultivating my own values and not getting lost in the space. And so my question to you is, how do you consciously, you know, seek challenges to grow and learn being part of this beautiful community? And how do you, you know, how do you separate yourself from it? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It's actually an interesting question because, you know, earlier on in the talk, I was reflecting on individuality and community, talking about festival culture, and in many parts of American culture, there is this sense of individuality and personal expression and freedom and uniqueness that sometimes really needs to be harmonized with the more community sense of working together and making collective decisions and being more of a community body instead of an individual identity. And for me, that is a constant dance, and I think it is for everyone at Dhammapur. And sometimes Dhammapur is considered by the Dhammapurians as a community of individualists, because we do have community values and this community sense of moving together and solidarity, supporting each other and collaborating. And also, each one of us is very unique. For example, our names. We all have different animal names, mainly Italian. And so this is, you know, it's a very unique name. There are, it's not like there are Karens or Bills or Sallys. Just to give some examples of American names, everyone is a unique animal. So my name means quail, and someone else is platypus, someone else is elephant, someone else is cat. And so I think the individuality of the names is really reflected in the individual personalities. And so there are many different avenues of every citizen of Dhammadhara having that space of personal expression and value and meaning and of being in the world. I mentioned the spiritual pathways. One of the spiritual pathways is that of the knights, which is a protection of the community and its members and building the temple. There's a pathway of self and healing. There's a pathway of art and word, so theater and arts and communications. There's also a pathway of self-sufficiency. There's one of art and work, so looking at the spirituality through work and commerce and business. And also, just about all of the choices in Dhammadhara are temporary. So if I'm part of the sacred dance pathway, I can make a commitment to that for maybe a year or 2 years, or anyhow, I always have the option to change. So if at a certain point I feel like my spiritual pathway is taking me more toward theater as an expression, then I can change to that spiritual pathway and express that different part of myself. One of the spiritual visions of Dhammadhara of the human being is that we're all a collection of different personalities that are very diverse. And so each one of us gives expression to many different personalities in the course of a day and of a lifetime. And so in Dhammadhara, I find that the container is so large and there's so much variety within that that I can allow so many of my personalities to be active at different points in time. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that will evolve, too, as I move on as a Dhammadharian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very sweet how, you know, there are different animals assigned to, or how each person can have a separate identity. I love that. My follow-up question is, do you find it challenging at all when, you know, you're not in the physical space of Dhammadhara? Do you find it challenging to just to be able to cultivate? I mean, of course, it's different when you're not part of the physical community, but can you share some thoughts on how you're able to be still aligned with your spiritual self, or what challenges you do have when you're away from the physical space of Dhammadhara?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that I have many different ways of staying connected, whether it's through meditations and rituals that I do in distance, to just very practically connecting in on the internet or on Skype or email. And so we have a weekly community meeting that's open to the public to discuss esoteric physics and the spiritual research of Dhammadhara every Thursday evening. And so that's a public forum at Dhammadhara, and it's also broadcast online live meeting. And so I'm able to connect to the community in that way. So there are spiritual ways and technological ways to stay connected at a distance. And going back to the Selfika, I was speaking about the Selfika temple space that's being created in the San Francisco Bay Area. With this technology, it also connects each of us as community members and as the peoples, as the popolo of Dhammadhara. Because in the Selfika realm, the realm that we work with, there isn't this distinction of individual identity. As much as we have as human beings, they kind of think and move and work as a collective of beings. And the same is true of trees. Trees don't have the same kind of individual identity as human beings. There's kind of this tree-ness. And so in Dhammadhara, we have a sacred woods, and it really is considered to be like one living entity. And so in some ways, it's like we're all cells of the same body. And so if one cell is in California and one is in Japan and another one is in Italy and different parts of the world, it's still one same body.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's so interesting. I also, it made me think about my own experience with living in communities, and I was wondering, I know that when you live in community, there's such easy access to so many, you know, opportunities and activities and people within aligned to the values that you're interested in. And it sounds like at Dominar, there's just a lot of, like, a wealth of activities and things like that. So I was wondering, do you find yourself doing, you know, are there other interests that you have that might not be necessarily related to Dominar, or, you know, groups of people or things like that? Is there, do you find yourself, ever needing to carve out space for that, or do you feel like it kind of just fits where, what your interests are and how you want to spend your time? Does that make sense?
It does. It's a great question. I feel like with all of my interests that there is connection to Dominar, and some of it is more integrated, some of it is less integrated, and I feel like I am in this role of bridging many different worlds and cultures with Dominar. So giving dance as an example, had experience in the ecstatic dance community. And so when I went to Dominar and I began the sacred dance practice, that's a very different practice. Whereas ecstatic dance is very free and expressive and free form. Sacred dance is extremely precise. Every movement is very precise. So it's even more kind of like a martial art than a dance in terms of its precision. And so my love of dance, I'm expressing at Dominar through this particular form of the sacred dance, and also bridging to the ecstatic dance community that that I know and love, and yeah, experimenting with different ways to bring that into Dominar and weave it into the fabric of the community. Also recognizing, respecting, and practicing the tradition of what is offered by Dominar. So it's a unique role. It's an experimentation, and I really love being able to bridge that. Like being at this festival, I am going to be sharing the Dominar sacred dance here. And so people are very familiar with an ecstatic dance and festival culture and this more free-form style of having a sacred experience through dance and get to know this Dominar way. The potency of that. And so I get to have both experiences and feel really fortunate for that.
Hi, Kalia. This is Gayatri here. Thank you so much. It's been great listening to you. My question was, I'm really interested to know if, you know, the practices or actions that you follow at Dominar on a, you know, to bring in interconnectedness into your daily life in the community.
So the solidarity in the community, I feel, is a very practical way this interconnectedness is expressed, and that manifests in many different ways. One that comes to mind is the children of Dominar, and there's a sense of really the community taking care of and raising the children, even though the biological parents, of course, have a very central role. And we also share the responsibilities, even of some of the economic responsibilities of raising children, and we all contribute to the cost of running the schools within Dominar. We have schools for the children, also some of the local children participate from nursery school through middle school. And so we all support the schools, and we all support some of the expenses for raising a child, whether or not we have children. And along with the shared child care and shared just being an influence for the children, a presence and a source of learning. And I find that this really helps parents, especially single parents, to be able to find that balance of being a parent and being in the community with responsibilities and work and ritual engagements.
So I also had another question about, I guess Well, two come to mind, but kind of in the Ramos family. You're originally from the United States, right?
Yes.
So I was wondering, how did your family kind of respond to your decision to kind of move to Italy and live at Domenher? Have they come to visit you, or, you know, is this, for my parents who would love to, for me to have a regular 9-to-5 career, this is definitely, you know, it takes courage to jump off the beaten path, follow a series of serendipities to a different continent, and then now live in a community that, in our modern paradigm of science and business, is kind of very, might be very out of context for a lot of people. So how, what kind of pushback do you get, and how has your family responded or support your decision to move and live there?
Well, I've always made choices that are off the traditional path. So my parents have gotten kind of used to that over the years, from being involved in activism and living in a temple space in San Francisco and doing different kinds of, you know, work as a healer and artist. And so it was just a, you know, kind of a next strange life decision for them, although one
sounds like they're used to it,
because they saw that I was happy and, you know, found a place where I'm happy and feel fulfilled, even though naturally they wish I were closer. They both live in Houston, Texas, where I grew up. So my mother's come to visit me, and my father hasn't yet, although I imagine he will in the future.
I do have I feel like you sort of answered it partly through the questions others have asked, but I want to kind of revisit what I had asked earlier about the edges and challenges that arise, you know, when you're not in the space of the intentional community. And the reason I want to go back to this is because I think that, at least I know a lot of people now that are really seriously thinking about building sustainable communities. As you know, it's very obvious that there is climate change and we are depleting our resources and we're not headed in a good direction. And the reality is that sustainable communities can no longer be these intentional communities. They have to be the new reality. Shifting to that is really difficult. It's people are living in denial. And when I think that for a lot of people that haven't had the exposure that probably a lot of us have had on the call, when they hear about something like Domenher or, you know, yeah, when they hear about something like that, they might think it's esoteric and unrelatable. And how can we live in that way, et cetera. And so my question is there a middle ground? Is there a middle way for creating communities that ultimately are the goal is to live sustainably, to live in harmony with all living beings, with each other, to cultivate our compassion. But is there, you know, as our global community shifts towards that, is there a middle way for people that are just, you know, living the 9-to-5 job and living in driving, you know, one person cars and just living the typical daily grind?
Well, I think coming back to sustainability and what sustainability means, I think there are ways of expressing that all over the spectrum, from living in an intentional eco-village. There are ones that might even be off the grid and completely self-sufficient, to, you know, living in a city and working a job and having a car and a house, with, you know, a single family house. And I see that it's important that I really want to communicate to all people, no matter what their lifestyle choice is the importance of really recognizing the interconnectedness of all of us. Even little everyday choices that build a sense of community. For instance, just talking to your neighbors, for example. I think some people come and have an experience of community, whether it's at Dominher or other communities in the world or at a festival, and just feel that rich sense of social connectedness. And then maybe go back to their one-bedroom apartments and their cars and the office, and recognizing that, oh, I don't have as many connections here in my life. What can I do to expand that? And I also see so many things that are already happening in urban spaces in different cities and in communities around the world, even if they're not specifically developed intentional communities. It's community in the sense of sharing resources. So even, you know, just looking at the economics of it, it makes sense to buy organic produce in a grocery cooperative or, you know, vegetable co-op sharing system in an urban space, other than going to a grocery and buying conventional foods that might be contaminated, or to have a more individual consumerist culture. And I also see that there's a co-housing movement that is really thriving here in America also, where people are kind of in this middle space of sharing resources, sharing living space, and also having some degree of personal space, individuality, and your own lives in this greater community context.
Thank you.
And also, having worked at Rainbow Grocery in San Francisco, there's so many worker-owned cooperatives, for example, that are bringing a sense of community and solidarity and more equality and awareness to working conditions as well. So, there are really so many spaces and groups and initiatives in the world that I think everyone can find something that resonates with them. I mean, it could be even in the suburbs, you know, a group of mothers in the suburbs who get together and support each other and take turns making meals, delivering meals to the other people. That's something that can happen within an existing structure that isn't an intentional community, although it brings the sense of connection and also efficiency of resources into an existing context.
Thank you.
Great. We have one last question in the queue.
Thank you. Yeah, what a beautiful gift, Quaglia. Thank you so much. And again, I repeat, I get that feeling that it's going to be yet another beautiful day. Thank you for, helping us make this day a beautiful day. My next question, I know we are running a little short on time. I'll try to keep it very succinct. My next question is around discovering communities. Along the lines of the Bela's last question, that has actually deeply touched the lot of the deep values that we hold as a small community here. And I do want to reflect back and say that that is looking at how we use the natural resources is the absolute, absolute need of the day. And it is each of, I say, and kind of wish and pray that it becomes an awakening moment for all of us to take that responsibility. So my question to you, Qualia, is around for someone who is absolutely new to this idea of what most term it as a radical idea of looking at the next generation, looking at the future, and seeing the best we can do to create these sustainable communities. From your experiences, how do you hold a space for somebody who's absolutely new and sitting on the fence, having probably a little ignorance, or I don't even want to use that word, but you know, having difficulty of their own to kick that punch into this, either creating or joining, and help them come out of that fear. How would you, from your own experience and insights, how would you hold a space with no judgment and coming from a space of compassion to help them and help each other to create such a system?
Well, I think to really have acceptance of everyone where they are in their particular path. And to have compassion, like I have compassion for myself. I know that 10 years ago I was in a really different space, and that 10 years from now I'll be in a different space and a different level of involvement in everything related to community and spirituality. And I think just holding that space of loving compassion, and instead of judging someone for what they may or may not be doing, including myself, I think it's important to ask, like, what is it that this person before me really needs? Mm-hmm. And so when there are guests to Dham and her that go into the temples, I really see a transformation, and I feel like it's really a universal need, that inspiration and reminder of what we are capable of as individuals and as humanity collectively. And so to give space to that, even if someone isn't necessarily wanting to think about resources and ecology, what is it that really makes them alive and passionate in the world, and encourage them to connect to that space? Maybe it's someone who has always wanted to sing, although he's been told as a child that he can't sing, and so, you know, has this desire to sing that has been kind of repressed within. So to encourage that. So if someone in the world who was afraid to sing and is now deciding to step into that space and sing and feel fulfilled by that, and that's also creating a better world, you know, as much as anything else. So I think it's that, holding that really human space of acceptance and allowing, and also encouragement to be who we really are and do what we came here to do.
Yeah, thank you also for bringing this the rainbow into the conversation. We also love rainbow very much, Rainbow Co-op.
Oh, yes. Yes, and I just
want
to...
Go ahead, Qualia.
Okay, I just want to add that I also feel that Service Space is such an inspiring community. Everything that I've heard and connected with around Service Space, and then the daily emails that go out, I feel that's also a really powerful community and source of inspiration. So I also want to thank you, all of you, for the work that you're doing in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, so when, in fact, that was my second part of the question, because we always get inspired about how we discover these communities. I was going to ask you quickly the story behind how did we discover from the Service Space community? How did we discover? We are so glad that we did. I was wondering, how did that connection happen?
Shortly after I came back to the San Francisco Bay Area, I was invited by a friend of mine, Melissa Hauser, to go to a movie premiere, Money and Life, and in Oakland. And there I met all kinds of amazing leaders in the community, including Nipun. And so we began a conversation about Dham and her, about Service Space, and then later reconnected.
Beautiful.
And yeah, he offered me this space of the forest call, which I'm really grateful for.
Wonderful. Mm. Yeah, completing that circle. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. So that concludes our Q&A.
Wow, Qualia, what a gift. You know, I do want to ask you just one more thing before we close, and that is, how can we serve you? How can we, you know, serve you along your own journey as members of, or as part of the service-based community, and also just as, you know, our own unique individuals? How can we help you?
Keep doing what you're doing in the service of, the spirit of service and compassion, and bringing so much light to the world and to people's hearts, and also to help spread the message and knowledge of Dom and Her and the community and activities that is being built in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm. So I know everyone on the call will receive a follow-up email with information. Mm-hmm. So if you feel inspired by any of this, please do connect in some way and come to Dom and Her, come to the San Francisco area events, and share with all of your friends and network, and encourage them to connect. I feel like that's really the richness of community, is the connections that we have with each other and exchanging inspiration like we have been doing.
Mm. Well, I know I'll definitely be connecting with the activities in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm really looking forward to it, and hopefully crossing paths with you again in person. That would be really wonderful. And again, I just wanted to sincerely thank you from my heart for sharing yourself with us this morning. Just thinking about the responses and the imagery that you painted through the sharing of your experiences really evokes a deep sense of joy that I feel from you for living in a way that celebrates and inspires our unique spirits, you know, to come out of our boxes, to live courageously, to live with that fierce love and compassion that's within all of us. And, you know, and that's in this era, there's a great need for collective awakening. And I sincerely feel that, you know, individuals like yourself and, you know, the members of Dom and Her, I don't know if members is the correct word, but, you know, other people from that community and other intentional communities are really gifts and guides for us. And thank you for your authenticity.
Thank you so much for that beautiful mirroring. It's been a real honor for me to share my stories and to share about Dom and Her with all of you.